Hello, Worldwide Engineering. Welcome to this episode. My guests today are Richard and Brom, founders of Revolver. Revolver is one of the world's largest global communities of engineers and innovators. With over 450,000 members, Revolver helps people like us find solutions to the world's hardest problems. Revolver has been awarded with the Accenture Innovation Award and has been listed by Fast Companies as one of the top 20 most innovative web platforms. All right, gentlemen, thank you for coming on the podcast. It's great to have you here. I've been following you for over 3 years now. I think Richard and I have been in touch on Instagram for over 3 years, and it's honestly an honor to actually be able to have this conversation with you guys. So for the people that don't know you, which is unfortunate, can you tell us a bit about your journey? How did you come up with the concept of Revolver? From the idea to the actual execution, what was your journey?
It's been quite a story. So let's start with. We started.
Maybe you can start by introducing yourselves, Bram and Richard. You know what you do, your positions.
That's a good start. So I'm Bram. My role within Revolver is CEO, and I'm also heavily involved with the software development and design of the platform, and I work with many of the large customers. That's the main thing.
Yeah, and I'm Richard, and my responsibility is mainly the marketing and the community aspect of the site.
When I was speaking with both of you on our first call, one of you is an engineer, the other one has an arts background, right?
Yeah, so I studied industrial engineering, and then started straight out of college. Actually, during my university year, started design studio. We focused on developing super lightweight products using 3D printing. And that was in like 2008, 2009. It was at the time where 3D printing was still called rapid prototyping, and our studio really tried to push the boundaries of the technologies by printing large scale functional products, like we were printing chairs, etc. And that was a super interesting experience where we always needed to get experts from all different fields together and collaborate on really leveraging the technology at its strengths. And I think I got to know Richard around that time. And yeah, you got excited about 3D printing as well and then started.
Yeah, well, I was actually also working in 3D printing. So I was running a 3D printing agency. And at what Bram just mentioned, like at the time that nobody knew what 3D printing was. So it's quite early. And what we basically were doing were educating the public about what 3D printing is, what they could do with it, also commercially. So we would do like a whole range of things. We would do government research. We did an assignment for Karl Lagerfeld to help them to design jewelry with 3D printing. It was very broad, and that's kind of where the overlap was, to start something together and make slow steps towards what Revolver is today, I guess.
Yeah, I think sort of where the connection between me and Rich is that both of us are really excited about the technology, and specifically we think technology can make a really big positive impact if it's done well. And that important for developing the right kind of technologies is having the right knowledge to start from. And something that we experienced, I guess, in our own fields, like it was so important to get the right knowledge on the table to do something meaningful in the field of 3D printing and digital manufacturing, and to be able to collaborate with people who were willing to share that knowledge. I think that sort of triggered us that we started thinking like, okay, we want to enable more people to innovate, and important to that is to be able to collaborate and to be able to have access to knowledge. That's sort of, what brought us together in Revolver.
And I guess this is, from the knowledge platform you had created about 3D printing, this is what drove you to actually evolved to become Revolver today, which is basically a global knowledge-based community. You know, it's a place that where engineers and people interested in technology can refer to as a knowledge source. So how do you basically curate your content? Because you know, I was on your website before this interview, and I was seeing a lot of articles written by publishers from NASA and from MIT, and I was like, whoa, that's actually pretty cool that you're able to have, you know, this cross publishing from those big companies that are creating awesome stuff. So what is the concept behind Wevolver? If you can, like, as an engineer, for me, how can I make the best of Wevolver?
How can you get the best out of Wevolver?
Yeah, like, what is the core service you offer, I'm gonna ask?
Yeah, so, well, from an engineering / user perspective, it's really what we're trying to do is get the most valuable knowledge out of universities, companies, but also individual technology developers, and really try to get the knowledge out of them and share it with a large community of engineers. And so that's the value we bring to our end user, and towards people who publish, it's just basically providing them with a massive audience where they can distribute their knowledge with. So it's like, yeah, it's a really valuable connection for both, I would say. Yeah.
I think you have to think about it like, as an engineer, to innovate, you must understand the current state of the art of technology, because, you know, otherwise whatever you build is sort of like not pushing the boundaries. So you need to understand where the current cutting edge is, and that knowledge about that comes from universities who are having these research labs and are doing their R&D there and creating new products. It comes from the technology developing companies who are constantly developing new stuff and pushing the boundaries, and as well from individual engineers, increasingly so in many fields. So we want to bring all those sources of knowledge together, and I think we can be a really important way for engineers to learn about these new technologies, stay up to date, to be able to follow a field and understand the developments that are going on, and bring it home so that you as an engineer then know what to build next. And that's really, I think, the role that we can fulfill in your engineering life, basically.
Yeah, I like you mentioned the word cutting edge. I told you that already. On every page on Wevolver, there's the word cutting edge, and there's like those really powerful keywords that you have there, like cutting edge, up to date, you know, all those things. So I'd like to dive deeper into this whole idea of cutting edge. You know, you guys are basically at the forefront of the cutting edge, what is happening out there. You know, you're constantly receiving content from the companies that are pushing the technological boundaries. So from what you've been experiencing from the last few years dealing with Wevolver, what are some of the cutting edge technologies that have been emerging and that are going to be setting, you know, picking up pace in the 2020th decade?
You start.
Yeah, well, I think there are many examples, and maybe you can dive into that later on as well. I think something interesting that I've been seeing over the past months, for example, really an effect on what's been happening with the pandemic, is that, for example, automation is becoming like is really speeding up, because people basically want to make sure that they don't run the risk again that people get sick in their factories. So that's something that you're really seeing a lot happening right now, which I thought was a very interesting thing to see.
Let's talk about this a bit. Let's talk about the automation. What do you guys see this as a good or bad thing for the economy and for society?
Ooh, yeah, that's a very hot topic, of course. I see it as something that's inevitable, for one. If it's good or bad, I think time will have to show us the impact. There's definitely going to be a lot of people that are going to lose their jobs of it. I can't predict what the effect will be. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it.
First thing I would say is, like, I'm not sure if I'm qualified to make really strong predictions in that field. But I do subscribe what Richard is saying, that the move towards greater automation is something that's an ongoing process. It has been going on for decades, if not hundreds of years. And that's not going to stop. What you do see is, if you look at sort of like very, very highly automated countries, the Western countries, look at a country like Germany, the Netherlands, like those countries have actually very, very low unemployment.
Interesting.
So, I mean, of course, the speed at which automation is happening now is extremely fast, and yeah, it might be sort of unprecedented. So it's at the same time hard to take lessons from the past and completely extrapolate them. But that it's happening, it's like without a doubt. And what I think is interesting is that you now see, like previously, automation often happened only at large scale, like a whole a car factory becomes gradually automated. And now you start to see automation moving even into like the tiniest yep. companies, like people, like companies with a handful of people, startups who are just a few years old, yep. who are looking into, can we get some affordable robotics arms, some AIs that we can just make our process more efficient? So I think that is because when we think about automation, we often think about like just big robotic yeah. arms in big factories. But I think the level at what is happening
yep.
is yep. changing. So, but yeah, bringing it back,
right?
It's super hard to just start making those predictions. I think for sure that jobs will be replaced by automation. The question is, what will happen to the, like what other jobs will come into being? That's, I think, a big question mark.
The tricky part becomes when automation is being implemented faster than people are actually able to reinvent themselves. You know, like you're right, for example, those highly automated countries such as Netherlands, Germany, if you look at it on a population scale, you're going to see that a higher percentage of the population is highly skilled for them to be working on top of automation versus countries that have lower levels of automation. But now the problem becomes in the 21st century, is that automation is moving at such a quick pace that people don't have the time to reinvent themselves. And you end up with those, you know, huge waves of layoffs or people that aren't able to find new jobs. You know, I don't know if you've heard of Yuval Noah Harari in his book, Homo Deus. Beautiful book, amazing. And one of the chapters, he talks about how in the 21st century, the number one skill people are going to need to thrive in this economy is being able to reinvent themselves. You know, 100 years ago, if you studied engineering, you're a technician, you're set for your career. You know, you can work, you can stay in this industry. But the way our economy is moving, our world is moving, it's moving so fast that, for example, us today, we're doing this. Maybe in 5 years, what we're doing is all going to be automated, and we're going to have to evolve basically and to adapt new skills, learn new skills. So that's definitely something fascinating.
Yeah, and that's why we at Revolve need to make sure that people understand what's happening, and like keep that they are able to stay up to date and keep themselves developing.
Yeah, and the last thing I wanted to say about that is that yes, that's happening. So, you know, in the past you would have like this one, you study one thing and that's what you did for the rest of your life. On the same hand, what you see in robotics is that it's become so easy to program or to work with a robot that it's also easier for people to switch what they're doing. So there's a lot of stuff happening there that's 100%. Hard to see where it will end up.
I absolutely agree. What are some, I cut you off on the automation topic because I really wanted to, it's something I'm really like, because the fact that it's a bit, you know, there's a lot of question mark, it's a gray zone, it's like, is it good? Yes, but there's also bads. So I wanted to dive into that. But You were going to talk about other trends you've been seeing happening. What are some of those?
Totally in line with automation is AI, and I think it's still even underestimated the change that AI is bringing. And I think we've not even scratched the surface of AI's capabilities at the moment. And I think Rich and I were talking about it the other day when, it is the next frontier where in a few decades or so, we'll look back and how we now do stuff these days, that we say like, how could these people live? Just as we now look back at people who lived 100 years ago and we're like, how could they live without electricity and without this kind of comforts, etc. And we're going to be looking back and think like, whoa, these folks, they had to think about everything themselves, right? Like they had to solve like all these problems. They had to solve themselves, and they didn't have an AI just doing it for them. And I think that like the fact that AIs are gonna that's often overlooked, that they're gonna free up a whole lot of sort of cognition that we now need to put in a way like the simplest things. I think that's a big impact. Apart from how it's applied in all these very, very specific cases, whether it's in automating things that now can't be automated, but once you are able to apply a sufficient quality enough artificial intelligence, it might be able to automate the most complicated task, because suddenly, that's possible. Of course, it's hugely impactful, AI also, when it comes to autonomous vehicles. So I think that is ultimately one of the biggest things.
Yeah, I agree. We had a very long talk about this yesterday in our spare time, so.
I can tell it's still fresh on your minds.
We sometimes should not talk about these things when we're off from work, but you know.
Yeah. No, so I think definitely that. And I think I think that's sort of the big thing, AI. But as I already said, like, it touches us upon, and automation and AI is almost in sync with each other. But it touches, of course, also upon what's happening in automotive with autonomous vehicles. I think another big development, so to throw something in there, which maybe not so, because AI is also, of course, an obvious thing, I think, what many people would say. So maybe on a smaller scale now, but a really interesting development I think people should pay more attention to is the field of photonics, integrated photonics.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, so we all know electronics, which is electronics that deals with the control of electrons right on the chip, to control things, to transfer information. And photonics can do the same thing, but instead of sending around electrons, you send photons, so light particles. And photons travel super fast. They can travel through certain materials without any loss of energy, and they can have a very high frequency range compared to electrons. All that makes that you can have very, very high data throughput at the fraction of the energy costs and heat, low heat of compared to electronic circuits. And that's that field of integrated photonics, so making circuits that run on light instead of electrons, that is up and coming. It's still very, very early, but it could make a huge impact. It could make computing faster. It could make it much more efficient. It could, like,
save
if you
energy.
Look at like how much energy we're spending in data centers that are all like heating up. Like photonics could make massive impact there. Other areas, and we've actually been working on a piece together with an organization called Photon Delta on that, an article about biosensing. So this is a very timely thing. You can use these photonic chips to measure certain biomarkers. Think a marker that shows if you have a virus or have had a virus. And you can do that at like super low cost if you produce those in mass. So photonics might enable a way to have testing super fast, low cost, locally, so that you don't need to, you know, you don't need to send your swab to a laboratory somewhere. You can just do it at the point of care. So it could be for COVID and potentially also other diseases, even potentially certain cancers could be detected at very, very low costs. So you can massively spread testing, and that could really battle all kinds of diseases, and of course specifically now COVID-19. So that's definitely a topic. Integrated photonics that I think people should start watching, because it's early and it has a massive, massive potential. So I think that's...
What phase is it at? Is it currently like, can you find it in the market, or is it still in the R&D phase where it's like in some lab in MIT, they're testing it and they're like, ooh, that, this is interesting?
Yeah, depending on the application. So... For example, of the specific, the biophotonics-based biosensors that I mentioned, those, as far as I know, are sort of like in development. So there's a roadmap to get them out of the door as soon as possible, and we're talking in a matter of months. But in other applications, there are already like early versions of photonic chips, and photonics is already used, like. Whether it's in I mean, for example, like fiber optics, that is a photonics technology. So photonics itself is already widely used, and it's now getting smaller and smaller and like in the chip form. But I would have to get back on that question, like which specific applications already are in the market and which are in R&D. But it's most heavily R&D phase now, I would definitely say, yeah.
Yeah, and we're actually producing going to produce a lot of content around it. So we're going to be sharing this over the next months anyway. So if you want to learn about it, it's going to
absolutely. I don't know if you guys read today that Facebook actually launched their own fiber optics internet cable. I sent that in my morning Telegram newsletter. And I thought that interesting that you were mentioning fiber optics, and they're basically, if you haven't heard of it, they think that this mode of transmitting internet is cheaper than doing it via Starlink satellites, for example. So they're trying to bet on cheaper alternatives to Starlink, and they basically, it's interesting. It could make also a nice piece of article. They actually have a robot. An automated robot that connects to already existing infrastructure, and it basically travels on the line, and it rolls behind it the fiber, the internet cable, which is super interesting. And yeah, it has a lot of potential when, you know, developing countries that don't have access to internet, because we tend to take internet for granted, you know, but when you think about it, a large proportion of the world does not have internet. You know, I was reading a stat this morning. In 2017, only 37% of India was connected to the internet. You know, like one in two people were not connected. But yeah, other than that, you guys recently wrote a beautiful book around self-driving cars. That was beautifully done. It was great. Yeah, it was beautifully done. Very detailed. And the thing with self-driving car, I was reading it, and the what's nice about it is that you covered the overall technology behind self-driving cars, which is an industry that's very quickly changing. So I'm sure in 5 years, you're going to look back at this ebook, you're going to open it, and you're going to be like, okay, we need to update a couple of stuff because it's just moving so quickly. And I remember at the time reading the ebook, you had the different levels of automation between 0 to 6, correct? Zero to five. So there's a total of 6 levels, 0 being one level, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So a total of 6 levels. And 0 being no automation, and 6 being five being full automation. And Elon Musk, for example, recently announced that he thinks Tesla will be achieving level 5 automation this year. What do you guys think of this?
So I do know that there is, the levels themselves are debated as, first of all, some people debate about how useful you are, and others about like what exactly each level means. Okay, so level 5 meaning sort of like total, like can drive anytime, anywhere, totally autonomous. And of course, like I would always make caveat that like even a human can't drive everywhere all the time. Like if you have an extreme blizzard tomorrow, but I think that's probably something that Elon Musk would also take into account, like drive anywhere where a human could drive. But that's already, I think, something. I mean, these levels are a bit, they're helpful to explain the concept where you go from, okay, there's zero automation, there is where the automated features take over one part of your driving and you do the rest, to the point where automation takes over, but you still have to monitor to make sure it doesn't go awry. Mm-hmm. To the ultimate level where, yes, can drive anytime, anywhere, but I think you have to be, so I would have to look into how Elon explains what level 5 means to him, because does it mean that the Tesla indeed can drive when there is a massive sandstorm and rocks falling down, that it still can drive even though a human couldn't drive? Or would it be able to drive in most normal circumstances? Well, that would be quite a surprise if he would be able to reach that so fast, because most of the experts think that that's still a few years away.
But he's usually says like 2020 and then it's 2022, you know?
I think that's one of his, you know, his strategies to, shoot for the moon and you might land on the star, you know, those types of things. Yes, absolutely. So what is the level we are currently at in 2020?
We are at level 4. Some companies have achieved level 4, but that is, that means, and particularly for example Waymo, like within a very constrained area, the cars can completely drive themselves without monitoring, but that is within a very constricted geofenced area that they have really mapped, and so they have achieved that. But that's as soon as you would go out of that area, the same car would fall back to level 3 in a way. So it's capable of level 4, but it's not what you wouldn't be able to buy a level 4 car now and say like, okay, I can just drive.
That's interesting. Okay, so it's very location dependent. So basically, the car, through data, through driving, the car learns by itself about its geographic surroundings. And if you throw a car in a new environment, it won't, you know, you won't have the same level of automation. That's interesting.
Specifically, for those cars who heavily, and most do now at the moment, heavily rely on HD maps, so high definition maps that really, like, they're different from Google Maps. They're like literally multiple layers of information, from 3D information to the centimeter level accuracy, location determination, like very, very detailed maps of the environment. And if you have that map, and then you also have the capabilities that the cars have now, then within a certain area, you would be able to achieve level 4. But then as soon as you go to an area that isn't mapped out to that level of detail, the car wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't be secure anymore that it could handle every situation.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting when I posted a screenshot of your little illustrations regarding the different levels on Instagram, and I was pretty surprised of how many people are actually reluctant towards self-driving cars. Like, a lot of people were saying, yeah, I'll never drive in a self-driving car. I prefer driving myself. And in my head, I was thinking, really? Like theoretically, self-driving cars will make driving safer, you know, for everyone. And I can even make the argument that at some point in time in the next few decades, driving a non-self-driving car is going to be illegal, because it will put other people's safety in jeopardy if you want to just go drive by yourself, you know? You guys agree with that?
Well, I'm not sure about it will becoming illegal, but the self-driving cars should ultimately be orders of magnitude more safe than a human driver. The thing is, like, humans have a hard time trusting machines. So, I mean, it's funny that the person who would say that, I would never do that, he would happily go sit in a taxi driven by somebody else. Mm-hmm. You never have seen driving. Like, you just came around the corner. And, like, who knows how he can, you don't even know if he's been drinking or not, right? So you trust that person. Also, of course, as well involved, you can look at him, etc. But still, you trust that person. At some point, we're going to have machines that we know, like, we've tested them and we know they're safe. So there is very little reason not to. I think it's just getting over the hurdle.
Takes time.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think these are things that people are often like to kick against initially. But over time, I think people will get used to it, and it might happen that it gradually goes. For example, first our taxis will become autonomous, and they'll get used to that, and then they'll get it into their own new vehicles. But again, this is not something that happens over one night before people get used to it. But I don't know, people like to kick at these things, but eventually it will.
That's a great argument. Yeah, it's a great argument what you guys just made, that a person is reluctant to go on a self-driving car but would have no problem jumping on a bus, for example. A very good argument. I'll keep I'll remember that next time.
Like, everyone who has been in a plane has been on autopilot, right? Like, the the pilots
good
only
point.
Do the landing and the takeoff, but the rest of the journey you have been in a autonomous flying vehicle in a way. Okay, there's still someone looking over its shoulder who can take over, but
back to Evolver, what are your few next steps, and what is your long-term vision with the platform?
Good big question. Let's start with, I guess, long-term vision. Kind of circling back to what we talked about in the beginning, like, Evolver can be for engineers the most important way to learn about new technologies, to connect with each other and with technology companies and universities. And that's really what we are working towards, to make sure that we have this great amount of really valuable knowledge on the platform, and that people can connect with each other and with companies and universities. And so next step is continuously getting better and more stories out there on the platform, getting more partners that we're working with.
So we're one of the things that we've recently started to do is enable more companies to share content directly on the platform themselves. So they take a subscription and share their knowledge, because often many companies are already creating really valuable high quality knowledge in, you know, articles, white papers, case studies, videos. So there's already so much material that engineers are not seeing yet. And we really want to support those companies and enable them to share that knowledge with the world. So that's something that we've been increasingly putting more efforts in, and then also making sure that we delight those companies with a really good platform. So yeah, I think that's kind of what we're focusing on right now, making sure we do that really well, and keep the community happy, of course.
Yeah.
That's cool. You guys are doing a great job. So where can people find you? I know Wevolver.com. I'll be putting all the links below. What are some other, you know, really cool resources that people can find you? I'll be putting links at the bottom. I'm also going to be linking your awesome ebook. For that, yeah.
So we're trying to really create as many channels as possible to reach engineers. So we're on, you know, all the usual suspects, you know, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, of course. We're also exploring new things, so we're dabbing our toes into TikTok, Pinterest. We've recently launched, publishing our content there. Flipboard, but the main ones are right now are, you know, the usual suspects. Yeah.
You also have a Reddit.
A really good newsletter. I think it's good. So they can subscribe on that as well through the website.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'll be adding all the resources in the descriptions. Rick and Bram, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
As you know, we're big fans of what you're doing as well, Leon. So we're definitely going to...
I know, man.
Yeah, let's continue this conversation.